Time to get started today, just a minute or so afterwards. I see we still have some family and friends visiting for the weekend, and it's good to catch up. We're thankful that you've made the decision to be here for worship today. We are in our Bible class hour, and we are studying from the book of Ecclesiastes. We encourage everybody in the room, have your Bibles open to Ecclesiastes. What you're looking at behind me is a little bit of text at the end of chapter 5. That's what we studied last week. We'll take a look at that in a moment. That's Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 18 through 20. And then our topic today is a shorter chapter in the series, 12 verses, Ecclesiastes chapter 6. We're glad for everyone's presence today. God has been very, very good to us in a great many ways. In addition to his son, we have health and safety and the chance to be here. We're very glad for that. Let's begin giving honor to him, and then we will study his word today. Our great God, we thank you for the blessings that we enjoy. We thank you that everything that's truly good and enduring, everything that leaves a lasting impression and matters, is directly from your hand and for our benefit. Things like your word and your son and the church and our spiritual lives, all of those blessings are from you. The fellowship that we have with fellow brothers and sisters in Christ, relationships that start today and last forever, is all from you. Our bodies, our health, our ability to be here, all of our strength comes from you. We're so thankful for all those things, and this week in particular, this past week, people have shown great thanksgiving for all these good things, but we know it is all because of you. Father, our goal today is to honor you and worship you in a way that pleases you and that also strengthens us to serve you better. We're thankful for Solomon's work, for the book of Ecclesiastes, for how straightforward it is, how it shines a light on things that are absolute truths in our lives, and it helps us to see why we're really here. Father, we trust you that you will guide us and look out for us today in your son's name. Amen. All right. Just a quick wrap-up of chapter 5. We studied it last week, and it's fairly lengthy, so there was quite a bit going on, and it introduced God into the picture. One of the things we've noticed in Ecclesiastes is the presence of the Lord is not mentioned all that often. There are certain sections where he's mentioned more often. Chapter 5 has God in it quite a bit, and it talks about making vows to him and keeping riches in their proper perspective, but it ends with this, and this is what we finished with last time. There are a series of recommendations in this letter, and here is the fourth recommendation of the Ecclesiastes letter. Here is what I have seen to be good and fitting: to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labor, in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him. For this is his reward. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. For he will not often consider the years of his life, because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. Okay, so four times in this section we have mention of God. We've asked you in your text to circle references to the Lord, because as I said a minute ago, you'll go long sections without seeing his name. But here he's brought back into the picture again. What were some of the topics that have been covered in chapter 5 leading up to this section? Tell me a little bit about the topics of chapter 5. What did he talk about?
The violation of our vows.
Okay, he talks about vows and commitments to God. And what does the fool do? And you're kind of looking at one, if that helps you. What does the fool do? Yeah, he just jabs and jabs and talks and makes promises and says things and throws words around. What does the wise man do? He chooses his words carefully. He honors his commitment to God. God is mentioned all over the first seven verses, verse 1 and 2 and 4 and 6 and 7, commitment to God. So it opens with this idea of decide who you're going to be for God and honor that commitment. Don't be a fool. Okay, after verse 7, which direction does the chapter take in chapter 5? I can get you back there. Let's see if I can get you back there. Ah, there it is. Yes, I can get you there. It talks about money four times in a quick succession. There is a reference to good things, abundance, and money. And what is the point in verses 8 through 12? What's the point?
That riches are meaningless.
They're meaningless in the sense that what? Say again. Okay, everything's equal to God. What else? Never. We're going to see that. We're going to see it in chapter 6. We see it in chapter 5. It's never enough to fill. There's always more that demands it, and there's never enough to meet that demand. Also, it can be lost. So there's all these sort of ideas of, look, make your commitments to God, honor your commitments to God, and just be careful of the absolute sort of nature of wealth. So when we get here, what, looking at all that, what's the recommendation? What's the takeaway from a chapter like that? Enjoy your labors. We saw a lot about labor in the chapter previous to it. Say again.
Thank God for your blessings.
Thank God for your blessings. Let me put him back in there just a moment. You know that what you have here is not built to last. It's not built to fill you up. It's not built to be the answer. So you take those few years that you have and you give God the glory for every good thing that you have, and you use it to the best of your ability, and you enjoy what is good. And so we've seen this over and over again. I hope you've been marking these in the emails that I'm sending out and what you see behind me. We've sort of done it in gray and underlined it. Those are the recommendations of the book. For he will not often consider the years of his life. I couldn't help but think in verse 20 of chapter 5 about the Sunday sermon that Ryan Goodwin preached from Psalm 90. What was that sermon titled? Psalm 90? Teach us to number our days. Teach us to number our days. Psalm 90, the Psalm of Moses. This says, he will not often consider the years of his life. He'll be occupied. He'll be sort of getting from one thing to the next. So there's our big recommendation. Keep God in the middle of it. Understand that there is futility in life under the sun without God. So we honor him and we try to keep everything in its proper perspective. Okay, I want to open it up to you just a moment. Any final sort of comments or thoughts about chapter 5? Anything on chapter 5? Okay. So let's move into this next section then. We'll be in chapter 6. Chapter 6 has 12 verses, and some of our markings there will be consistent. Let's begin by reading the first 6 verses. Here's what I need you to do as we read these first 6 verses. I need you to find the three guys. In these first 6 verses, there are three men. Maybe it's a representation of the same man in three different ways, but the point is, the impact of this section is seen through the lives of three guys. So you be looking for those men. And I'll read the 6 verses aloud. Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verses 1 through 6. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is prevalent among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor so that his soul lacks nothing of all that he desires, yet God has not empowered him to eat from them, for a foreigner enjoys them. This is vanity and a severe affliction. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, however many they be, but his soul is not satisfied with good things, and he does not even have a proper burial, then I say better the miscarriage than he. For it comes in futility and goes into obscurity, and its name is covered in obscurity. It never sees the sun and it never knows anything. It is better off than he. Even if the other man or the man lives 1,000 years twice and does not enjoy good things, do not all go to one place. All right. There is the section there. What I want you to note is two of our predominant three theme ideas are present here. You remember from the very first of the letter, there is a scope under consideration, life under the sun. There is a question being asked, what's the advantage of life? And there is an answer always given, vanity or futility. Well, you've got all that here. At least you have the idea that there is an evil under the sun. He ends this section with under the sun, and he talks about futility. So here's my question for you. Did you see the three men? There is an evil, verse 1, that I have seen under the sun, and it's all over the place. To try and help you understand that evil, Solomon says, I'm going to tell you about three guys. Tell us about the first guy. He had some good things. He's rich. He had riches, wealth, and wisdom. What else did this man need? Nothing. He has riches, wealth, and wisdom. What else? I mean, maybe relationships and family, but chances are in his riches and wealth and wisdom, he's built some of that. He desires nothing. But what's the problem with this man's case? Okay. Doesn't know how to enjoy them. What else might it be indicating?
A foreigner enjoys them.
What does that mean? God has not empowered him to eat from them, for a foreigner enjoys them. Okay, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but whether he does or doesn't, God has not empowered him to just sit at the table every day and dine on the produce of his wealth and knowledge and wisdom. Yes?
So what I know that made a lot of money, but came very wealthy, but he didn't enjoy any of that really because very suddenly he came down with cancer and died. All of that that he had accumulated was left to his heirs. And the wealth came very suddenly and he died very suddenly.
Okay, I think this is the direction all three of them are going. This idea that he has everything that a man could ever want. Yet life does not guarantee that you get to sit there and enjoy all those things for decades upon decades. You can die instantly. Someone can take it from you. And here's a man who got life just how he wanted it. And somebody else ended up enjoying it. Did Jesus not tell a similar story? Did Jesus not tell a similar story when the man raised his hand and said, could you get me the inheritance that's due me? And Jesus said, let me tell you about a man who built barns. And then he planned ahead and he built larger barns. And he could look back and say, there it is. Life is just like it ought to be. And then what happens in the very next verse in that story? Today, your soul is required of you. Who's going to handle all this stuff you build? Answer, I don't know. Or the man didn't know and he had no control over that. So the first example of evil is a man who has every good thing mankind thinks they want. But he's never even really given a chance to enjoy it. How futile was his pursuit under the sun? It's our first thing. Tell me about our second man. Maybe the first man was really missing the true key ingredient to happiness and the second man would find it. So tell me about the second guy. This guy is dead broke. I mean, not two nickels. He has 100 kids. I don't know. Maybe he's wealthy. The point is, that's not the point. The point is this. He fathers 100 and lives many years. Okay, so this guy's got the real secret. You know, when we talk to people about this, we say, it's not about money. It's not about power. If you really want to know what life here is about, and we kind of move God over to the side, it's about, well, Thanksgiving, right? It's about family. It's about our children. It's about the people closest to us. So this guy's got all that. 100 kiddos, all named George. That's what Mr. Foreman would do. What's wrong with this picture? Okay, something about that relationship does not seem right. What's going on with this guy? He's not counting his blessings. Got 100 kids. You ever see a guy with a great family? Beautiful wife, terrific little kiddos, the opportunity to be with them, and you stand back and you watch this guy just blow it every day. All he cares about is work, all he cares about is himself, all he cares about is this. And those kids, meanwhile, they don't grow up until you're ready, right? No, they're just growing, and then they're gone, and then it's over. And then that guy sits in a preacher's office when he's 70 and says, I don't know what I did with my life. I wish I could do it all over again. Yeah, I bet. Here's a man who has the family, but he's not satisfied. His soul is not satisfied with good things, and he does not even have a proper burial. Now, that's a strong indication. That's sort of an overstatement in a figure, but it means, the kids, he's so distanced from his children, they don't even give him a funeral. That's an extreme, right? And so what it teaches us is that life is short, and God's blessings are there. But here's a man who has all these riches, and he thinks that's the answer. It's not. Here's a man who has family, but he doesn't know how to enjoy it for what it is. He doesn't know how to give it the right place. He's probably off pursuing riches, and it comes to naught. That's our second guy. Tell me about our third guy. Maybe our third guy finds the secret of life. If it's not wealth, and the second guy wasn't able to find it in his family, what did the third guy find? Man, who wants to do this? Raise your hand if you want to do this. Raise your hand if you are interested in living 1,000 years twice. And you're not a vampire. If you're vampires, do that. I don't even know if I'd want to do that. Think about the things you would see that you don't really want to see. But this is a guy, these are three examples to show you extremes. Here's a guy with tons of wealth and wisdom, got taken away. Here's a guy with all that family unit, didn't understand what he had, and then it was gone. Here's a guy who gets to live 2,000 years. And isn't that what people are pursuing in this time? They want to live and live and live on and live on, because that's sort of the big secret, is longevity. But what happens here? He's negative. He doesn't see anything good. Even if the other man lives 1,000 years twice and does not enjoy good things. You've been here 2,000 years. But if you can't enjoy verses 18 and 19 from the last chapter, and you can't take in one day's blessings from God, what's going to happen in the end anyway, no matter how long you live?
In 2,000 years, he would have been able to accomplish a lot. And the preacher doesn't even refer to it, doesn't even see it worthy as of note.
Yeah, which is part of the theme. Dan's right. The theme of the letter is just cyclical, and there's nothing that really lasts. So this man, he does all this. He has trouble enjoying it. But even then, you think, if I live 2,000 years, eventually I'll find it. I do watch some old vampire movies at times, and they live and live and live generation after generation after generation, and they're these sad, pitiful 1,500-year-old vampire people who watched a lot of friends and family die and have this really downer kind of thing. Look, you could live 2,000 years, but you'd see a lot of sadness, and in the end, guess what happens? You still die. We've heard, and I've not preached the sermon this way. Mr. Jimmy's here today, maybe he has, but you hear guys who'll just go through the Genesis account and say he lived 969 years. Wow. And he died. And he lived 830 years. And he died. They're all going to that same place. So here's a guy with wealth. Here's a guy with family. Here's a guy with time. And the only way any of that matters is if you understand chapter 5, verses 18 and 19 and 20. Every day is a blessing from God. Time is short. Take his blessings, enjoy them in his name, and make it about him. Yes, sir?
Look at it. Somebody gets a second chance in life, and they go back to the point again. There was no change. You get an opportunity as a Christian.
Yeah.
You get a second chance in life, and yet you choose to go back to the old way.
It's an interesting way of reading verse 6. Maybe he lives 1,000 years, blows it, and God says, take 1,000 more. He gets a second 1,000 to make it all right again, but it doesn't look like that he does. And then he dies, and then it's over. All right, so maybe there's a way we can wrap this up. The question that you have on your material, question 5, is what evil is characteristic of all of these guys? Even if you think they're all the same guy or however you want to do it, it's pointing out three different things. What is this evil of verse 1 characterized in these guys? What do you think? Maybe it's more than one thing. But what stands out to you? All of them share this in common. There was some unfulfillment, some emptiness in their lives, even though their lives were filled with stuff. or people or days. There was emptiness. What else?
They were serving themselves more than others.
All about me, serving themselves. It's a really interesting way of looking at this. My riches, my wealth, my honor, my family, my time, and yet they didn't get the enjoyment out of them that God intended. Mr. Jimmy?
If they had any sense of wanting to accomplish something, then you've got procrastination in the picture. They keep putting it off till later because I'll have time later. But there's no assurance of that.
Yeah. I'll get closer with kid number 88. You know, the first 87 and I haven't been all that close. We don't spend a lot of time together, but I'll do that with the next dozen kids, and then time goes and it passes by. So here's the thing. When you think about this, there are two things in all the Ecclesiastes chapters you have to understand. One is there will always be a truth in the chapter that is inevitable for you. You can't avoid it. It's the absolute. In this case, it's no matter how much wealth you accrue, it can be taken away at a moment's notice. No matter how much time you get in this life, you're never going to get as much as you want, and one day the lights will go out. No matter how many children you have, there's a risk of that relationship not being strong. There's an inevitability. There is an evil in this life you cannot avoid. The futility of, well, everything, basically, in the letter, but the futility of these three things. But there's always in those same chapters something I can learn to make it better, right? So there are inevitabilities about these guys, and then there's what are you going to do to make it better? What do you think?
Some of this I can't
control about these three guys and who I am, but here's what I can control. What do you got?
You have to know where all of his wealth came from. You have to know where all the blessings of his family came from. And even the 1,000 years, you have to know where all of that comes from.
Give God the glory as the source of all three things. Was there anything naturally evil in those three men's lives? Was health and wealth, is that evil? He made it evil. Is a large family a problem? No, he made it a problem. Is time naturally wasted by its very nature? No, you waste it or you don't. So what I see here are some truths that Justin and I can't avoid. We're stuck with these truths, but also the kind of husbands and fathers we can be because of what's here can be shaped as well. Let's look at this next section. Got a little bit of edge off over there. Let's look at verses. Oh, there's God, by the way. He's still in the picture here. Let's look, and there's the men. I know I should have just kept clicking. Sorry. Let's look at verses 7, 8, and 9. Verses 7, 8, and 9. All a man's labor is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not satisfied. For what advantage does the wise man have over the fool? What advantage does the poor man have knowing how to walk before the living? What the eyes see is better than what the soul desires. This too is futility in striving after wind. Now let me go ahead and make sure I get the clicking done here. And I know we pinched the edges a little bit, but we have the what advantage question. Remember, we are naturally in every chapter marking three things, the under the sun phrases, scope, the question of the book, what advantage is there, and then the blue, the answer to that question. And you've got it here again. And also, if you've been following along with the better marking, you'll want to mark this. That puts us up to, at my count, we have 6 betters in chapters 4, 5, and 6. You had 4 there in chapter 4, 1 trickled into chapter 5, and now 1 here. And we'll talk about that. What the eye sees is better than what the soul desires. But here's the question that comes up in our lesson. This section explains one reason men suffer this evil. Why do men suffer the evil that we saw earlier in this chapter? Wastefulness, procrastination, emptiness. Why is that?
Because they wish for and dream for things they can't have.
Okay, wish for and dream for things they can't have. And then once they get it, or they don't like it. I was thinking about the Emerson family and the dog we get every 5 years. You guys know that dog? Life will be great if we get that dog. And then a month later, you want a dog? We're like that. It's our nature, the way we are, to want and desire and pursue. and labor, and yet there's either it doesn't taste like we thought it was going to taste, or we want more, all right? This lends to the evils of this life that are sort of inevitabilities for us all. What else do you see here in this section? Appetite is not satisfied. Remember, there's a sense in which that's going to be true of us all, and there's a sense in which we can do something to kind of avoid that. Let me ask you the questions. What advantage does a wise man have over a fool? Before you answer, if we were studying Proverbs, and I said, what advantage does a wise man have over a fool? What would you say?
Much in every way.
You'd say a lot, wouldn't you, Paul? You'd say a wise man has a lot of advantages over a fool, and you would turn to, I don't know, every verse in Proverbs, nearly every chapter, and you'd say, look, I mean, this will go better, and this will go better, and you'll do that, and boy, just, I mean, there's huge advantages over knowledge, over foolishness. He even talked about that, one of our contrasts that we made earlier in the letter where we marked that, talked about that very thing, the contrast between wisdom and foolishness. But here in this text, let me ask you the question. For what advantage does the wise man have over the fool? What's the answer?
So wait a minute.
Solomon wrote both letters. In one letter, at least in portions of it, large portions of it, the answer is tons. And yet in this chapter, the answer is, well, you said it, nothing. Why is that? What's going on here? Why is the answer nothing?
Wayne.
The scope of the books are different, so the scope of Proverbs has to do with how to be in this life in a better way. And the scope of Ecclesiastes is, what's the point of life without God?
Okay, excellent. Scope is powerful. The purpose of the context makes a big difference. Thanks for getting us started. Yes?
The difference is there's two types of wisdom. Spiritual wisdom, the wisdom that's from above, and then there's the wisdom under the sun. The wisdom under the sun, just dealing with earthly things, the wise man that is wise under the sun is actually a fool. He doesn't, his wisdom gets him into trouble because he pursues this earthly wealth and all of these earthly things, and they amount to nothing.
They amount to nothing in the end. I think that that's the idea of verse 7 helping us with verse 8. What advantage does the wise man have? Well, Proverbs will tell you he's probably going to get a lot more things. He's probably going to do better. But will his appetite be quenched by his extra successes? No. His wisdom may provide him more, but that more will not fill in whatever void he's trying to encapsulate and fill. So in that sense, while you may be more successful than the fool, you will be more successful than the fool in almost every way. It's not as if the wise man finds a way to fill the tank and keep it full in the scope of life where we move God aside. Yes?
And I think it's timing also. Solomon was at different places in his life when he wrote each of those books.
Absolutely true. A lot of self-indictment here. There are many, many times I think Solomon wanted to just put his name right there. That's me right there. And maybe when he talks about the rich in particular, yes.
Understands, and with the understanding, he knows more how to handle his life.
He does.
But he always
does. Well, he does, and so in some ways there are advantages. And that's why we're here in this study. We want to know more, do better, have a better thing. But it's kind of like today's study. Everybody could walk out of here in a minute, every single one of us, totally understanding the three men. Got it. Wealth, got it. Family, got it. Time, got it. I know exactly what I need to do about that. And walk out of here, and I'll see you next Sunday. And I'll say, hey, you must have had the best week of your life. Because you knew that wealth wasn't what it was about. And treasuring your family was more important than that pursuit. And you need to use every moment to its fullest. You must have had the best week ever. And you're going to look at me and say, yeah, it was about like last week. No, wait. We study this great chapter. There's no doubt about it. You know, we can know more, but it doesn't just mean that life becomes just like rosy and perfect. Because that's not how life works here. We can grow and do better, by the way. We can do that. We're here to do that. But it doesn't mean we have this fullness because of our knowledge. And you're right as well, differentiating between spiritual knowledge of God and what's more under the scope here, which is knowledge that's just related to how to live. Second question I found very interesting. Had to think a lot about it. Did a little reading about this. I'll throw it over to you. I think it's easier to answer, what advantage does the wise man have over the fool? But what about this? What advantage does the poor man have knowing how to walk before the living? What do you think about that? What would Proverbs say? Okay, it's less to worry about. That's what Ecclesiastes would say. It's less to worry about.
When he does get something, he's going to be more appreciative.
Okay, maybe more appreciative. What would be better? Great riches and wisdom and honor and a large family and a long life and the lack of spiritual intelligence to enjoy it properly, or poverty with no riches, a short and unhealthy life, and a small to non-existent family. But you are right with God. I'm not going to make you answer right now. Think about it.
The only thing that really matters is if we're right with God.
That's right. And this letter is sort of taking you away from that a moment and talking about life here so that it can reinfuse you with hope in your relationship with God. Yes?
Another thing there is the poor man walking before the living would be more meek. And without God in the picture, without an appreciation for God, without a relationship with God, just simply being meek under the sun isn't going to get you much.
Yeah, I put that note as well. I don't think he's saying that it's better to be poor than rich. I don't think he's saying that it's better to be a fool than wise. I think he's saying in some ways it's really not going to matter. I mean, in some ways, whether you're rich or poor, you're subject to futility. Whether you're wise or foolish, you're subject to futility, this evil of death. And so there are drawbacks to being impoverished as well. Something back this way? Yes?
Think about the people that Jesus went and talked with. Those were the ones that were the poor. The ones that, from our perspective, we may look at them and say, why did you go talk to those people? They're just poor. They're off to the side. But yet, those were the ones that didn't have everything they needed and needed to depend on someone else besides themselves. And that's where the wise man gets into trouble. He's got everything he needs. He's wise. I can depend on myself for everything. I don't need God. And it's the poor man that realizes, I don't have anything. I need help from somebody else. So that's the advantage of the poor man sometimes, is they're seeking help from others.
Those are great observations. What I would have you thinking about as we wrap this up is I think the answer to this question is the same answer of every what advantage question in the whole book, which is what? Well, but what advantage is there? Not an advantage. So the rich man, the wise man doesn't really have an advantage over the fool because of the nature of life here. And the poor man, how about being the poor man? Is it in the Proverbs that it talks about the rich king and the poor servant? And what's interesting about that is, you know, the poor man may know exactly how to live. He'd know exactly what to do with his money. He would know exactly how to raise 100 kids. And he would know exactly what to do with 2,000 years, but he doesn't get it. He knows what to do with it, and he's got nothing. One man's got everything. He doesn't know what to do with it. Such is the futility of life under the sun without God. And I have to think about the story Jesus told about the rich man and Lazarus. One had it all, one had nothing. And that's the way it goes sometimes. But one was in paradise. And one was in torment, not because he was rich, not because he was poor, because of their relationship with God, no matter what. There's what Ecclesiastes will leave us with. Let me get one more comment over here, and then we need to move to this last section, or somebody. There's several. Let me go two. I'll go Mr. Eugene first.
It boils down to the fact that both of them had the opportunity to serve God and to fear God, and it's only owing to how they handle it.
Observation. Yes, ma'am?
I'm sorry. Proverbs 38, verse prayer, that let me be rich that I may forget you, and give me enough that I won't steal and dishonor you.
Ryan talked about that in one of his lessons as well. Agur's requests. Don't give me so much that I forget you, and don't give me so little that I feel the need to steal. Contentment. So much there. Here's our last section. There's our better phrase, by the way. What the eye sees is better than what the soul desires, which we'll talk about a little bit as we move forward here. Look at verses 10 and following. First of all, in verse 9 again, what the eye sees is better than what the soul desires. In other words, if you have it right in front of you, you can do something with that, but this wishing for other things is an emptiness to it. Whatever exists has already been named, and it is known what man is, for he cannot dispute with him who is stronger than he is. For there are many words which increase futility. What then is the advantage to a man? For who knows what is good for a man during his lifetime, during the few years of his futile life? He will spend them like a shadow. For who can tell a man what will be after him under the sun? Now this text immediately harkens you back to other texts. First of all, chapter 5, verse 18 mentions the few years of his life in the recommendation. Few years in your life, you need to use them honoring God and using your blessings the right way. And here we have that again, this idea of the few years. Also, I think very strongly of chapter 3, verse 11. Chapter 3, verse 11, God has put eternity in your heart. He has built you an eternal soul, yet man, so many of mankind, fail to see that, fail to understand it. And this is really similar to that. Who can tell a man what will be after him under the sun? Here's the question we put on your sheet. Why is fighting against the natural transitions of life and its possessions so futile? Why is fighting against the natural transition? Somebody's going to leave today and say, I don't like chapter 6. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I don't think I like any of these 6 chapters. I don't like this whole futility, emptiness business. I don't like sort of downplaying my career and what I've got. I don't like it. And then I'm like I die like a dog. Preach something else. Here's my question. Why is fighting against the natural transitions of life so futile?
Can't change them.
Why else?
We don't know what the future will hold.
Okay, we don't know what's coming next. That's why we enjoy today for the best that we can. What else?
Because God is ultimately in control.
God is ultimately in control. The way you read verse 10, there's some ambiguity there in terms of assigning the value of the pronouns that you come across. But whatever existed has already been named. That really goes back to how Solomon opened the letter, cycles, and you know it all sort of amounts to the same ending. And it is known what man is, for he cannot dispute with him who is stronger than he is. Could be talking about God here. He cannot dispute with the authority. Name often is synonymous with authority. He cannot argue against the authority of how God has designed it. You can't change it. You can't change the way God has designed it. Or maybe it's just talking about people in this life who are stronger than you and have their thumb on you. You can't just remove that thumb. You may live your whole life with that thumb on you. That's the way you can't change it because of power that is greater than yours. I like to assign the value to God here because it's somewhat optimistic. And that I live under the control of the name of God. He knows who I am. And trying to change the realities of this life is a wasted life. People waste their whole lives trying to do that. Yes, sir.
The things that happen to us in life, the forgiveness, and the things that beset us, they are all tests. And if we handle those with just a view under the sun, without looking to God, it's vanity.
Good observation. Anybody else on this verse, this section? I want to tell you something as we close. By the way, chapter 7 is pretty meaty. It's pretty hearty. It's 29 verses, I think, something like that. So you're going to want to get a head start on that next week. We need to try to cover it in a week and a half. During our Thanksgiving dinner this last week, before I'm always asked to say the prayer. Preachers and elders know what I'm talking about. I started by talking to my family, and there were a lot of extended family, a lot that aren't Christians, etc., but I talked to them about John Banks, who is a friend of ours, lives in Phoenix, where Ryan preaches, very sick, He was given about 4 years to live. He's in his 20s, married, a sweet girl named Reagan. They have a child. And he was given about 4 years to live 2 years ago. And I don't know that anything's really changed those numbers that much, but he's had a really rough week. He was in the hospital all day, Thanksgiving. You know, while we were doing what we were doing, watching three football games, he was sitting in a hospital bed dealing with a growth and some abdominal pain. And he preaches. He preaches beautifully. He's using his time. He's preaching in lectureships. He's making a difference. His wife, Reagan, I mean, she's just a kid, really. I think I can say that now. I'm 38. She's in her early 20s. But she posts these beautiful odes to God, you know, to what God is doing and the need for prayer. And I don't know, I shouldn't say this out loud because it probably won't make sense. But I think for just a couple of minutes Thursday night, I was jealous of John, if that makes sense. I shouldn't say it like that, but that he knows how long he's going to be here. He knows why he's here. He knows what to do. He's in so much pain. I should not have said that. But he gets it, and she gets it. And the clock is ticking, and they're going to use that time just as beautifully as they know how, and they're doing it. And I don't know. There's something to that. Now, the question is, can we get that without knowing when the end is going to be? That's what I'm working on. Hope you're working on it too. Kids are coming in. That's all we have for today. Thanks, guys.